Will you please join me for the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Now let's give a warm San Clemente welcome to tonight's 40-minute speaker, Mario from San Clemente.
My name is Mario. I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to be here. I want to thank Jordan for asking me to speak tonight. Welcome to the newcomer. So glad you made it. I was told that when I first got here that my seat was saved. They were waiting for me. And I truly believe that. That it is because of the newcomer that I'm up here today. You know, this is what this program has been about for me, is being of service. And congratulations to all the people that had birthdays. You know, that's a gift, you know, to see that. It's a miracle. It's a miracle to have one day at a time and to come and round and achieve another year of sobriety. That's just a gift. Congratulations. It's been a good day today. It's been a really good day. I teach, and we're heading into our Christmas break. I keep forgetting to say that. And I'm really excited about spending some time with my family. I grew up in San Juan. My parents moved here from Fort Ord in 1971. And my parents are still married today. I have a really great family. I have two brothers, and I'm really close with them. And I grew up in a pretty normal household. And, you know, nothing really extraordinary happened in my life until about 12 years old. I had my first drink. My parents used to have these really big gourmet parties. And in the mornings, I'd clean up. And I remember bumping into one of the kegs. And it shot out at me when I bumped in, and I go, holy smokes. And it was about 11 o'clock, so it was really warm. And I looked around, and I grabbed one of the cups that were still there, the red cups, and I filled it up. You know, that's what adults did. And I remember drinking it, and how hot and bitter it was. And then I said to myself, well, this is what they do. And there's got to be a reason for it, so maybe I need to drink some more. And I was 12 years old, maybe about 79, 80 pounds, and I just drank the whole thing. And from that point on, with nothing in my stomach, I remember the feeling of what alcohol did to me. I was going through eighth grade, and that power, that sensation of not being who I was supposed to be, or something, somebody else, you know, I'll never forget it. And I liked it. I liked it so much that from that point on, you know, my whole outlook on life changed, that there was something in my life now that could change who I was. And I didn't like who I was. So I looked forward to drinking more and more. The people that I surrounded myself in that neighborhood were mostly like me. We liked to hang out and do the same things. And was just getting in trouble and drinking from wherever we could find it. We used to steal it from our parents' liquor cabinets. We used to pimp beer and hard alcohol wherever we got a chance. And I remember the first time that I really got drunk was my eighth grade dance. And it was our end of the year dance. And I remember one of my teachers looking at me and just going, are you okay? Are you okay? And I just looked at him and said, I couldn't, you know, I'm fine. I'm fine. I remember going home and just passing out and, you know, remembering what we did, you know, earlier that afternoon, just flashing by. It's like, here I am in eighth grade and I'm, you know, pounding all these Henry Weinhards in the dumpster area. You know, this is what I thought normal was for an eighth grade boy to be doing. And, you know, at that point, I didn't see how this was progressively getting worse. You know, I thought this was progressively getting better. You know, I found more people that, you know, that like to do what I like to do, and it was enjoyable for me. You know, I didn't see the detachment of my family. I didn't see the trouble that I was getting into. You know, I used to mask it by saying it's going to be okay, you know, once I drank over it. You know, high school came around, and again, more time for my parents to be away from me allowed me to have more time to myself and just experience what I wanted to do, and that was to just pretty much just get drunk. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It took me away from school. It took me away from my parents. It took me away from everything else that I had to do in my life that I was supposed to be responsible for. You know, from that point on, I didn't realize that this is a time in my life where I'm supposed to be developing skills that's going to take me forward after. You know, this was a time in my life that I felt that I have so much freedom, you know, to do these things because everybody's like expecting me to be doing something else. And I took it upon myself to be doing what I wanted to do. You know, that self-centeredness, you know, really showed itself in my high school year. And it was, for me, I felt that it was like liberating, but I didn't realize that was the insanity of my alcoholism coming and showing itself in my life, that what I was doing I thought was normal. And it was totally abnormal. Like, my friends were doing homework and showing up to class. I was like on first name basis with my vice principal because of all the truancies I had. I had no credits. And it's like I really didn't care, you know, because I thought everything was okay. And because my parents were so busy doing what they were doing with their lives, you know, I found it an opportunity for me to just, you know, self-will run riot in my life. And, you know, I didn't appreciate what I had. You know, I didn't appreciate the love that my parents had for me at the time. I didn't appreciate the relationships that I had with my parents. And I can, you know, look at it, you know, now, you know, I can see all the family albums and all the trips that they took and everything that they did. And I was missing, you know, for a reason. You know, I was a rebellious teenager. I didn't want to be a part of those things. So I missed the trips to Mazatlan. I missed the trips to Big Sur. I missed all these trips to Magic Mountain. And it's like, here, everybody else is having these great times. And I can remember, you know, being passed out, you know, throwing up on myself, you know, having people bring me home, you know, without, you know, for just a pair of pants on, you know, and just, that's how I drank. And, you know, I didn't really have an incident with my drinking with legally until I got arrested when I was 16 years old. We were drinking on Bocadilla Canyon at night, and Officer Schmidt from the San Clemente PD came down with no lights on and flashed them, and we were there. We got arrested for being underage, possession of alcohol, and out past curfew. And that was the first time that I ever heard my dad cuss at me, you know, and him coming down to the jail when San Clemente had its own police department. I remember sitting in there. Oh, at first I remember sitting in the car and realizing, oh no, you know, how is this going to impede my drinking? You know, that was the only thing that, you know, I was concerned about, that this was going to just ruin, you know, what I was doing in my life. Yeah, you know, I had no idea the wreckage I was, you know, accumulating in my life at that point. Now, all I saw was, am I going to get grounded? Am I going to, like, how's this going to work? You know, me being arrested, you know, my parents are going to have to get a lawyer. I mean, I didn't care about anything else, you know, and that's where I was in my life. Nothing else mattered. Nothing else mattered. I mean, I woke up without one sense of how, when, and where. Who I was going to drink with, where I was going to get drunk at. And it's like I knew all the people that had alcohol. I knew all the houses that had alcohol. I knew if my parents had alcohol. I knew how much vodka was mixed with water and if I could steal any more before they knew it was going to be gone. I knew where beer was hidden in my house. I knew in the backyard. I knew specific bushes. It's like this is how I led my life. You know, this was normal 16-year-old behavior, which I thought. And I didn't see the insanity of what my disease was like. I remember my dad looking at me and when he picked me up from the police department, and that his eyes, you know, he didn't know who I was. He didn't know who his son was anymore. You know, here he was, my coach, he's soccer, all these years I played and camping and teaching me how to surf. And he didn't know who this boy was. You know, he didn't know who this young man was anymore. You know, and that, I didn't care. You know, all I thought about was how that was going to affect my drinking. You know, I didn't care about him. I didn't care what I was doing to my mom. And my brothers were scared of me because I just came home and locked myself in my room. And I thought I was under control. You know, I was very like, don't worry about it. I got it. It's no big deal. You know, it's just a little mistake. Everybody gets caught for a mistake. You know, I tried to minimize my behavior, you know, because I thought I knew everything. You know, I didn't realize how my life was going down the toilet. My dad thought it would be a good idea that if I changed where I was working. I was a short order chef or cook at a Donut World in Capitol Beach and at Dana Point. And he said that was a bad environment for me to be at. So he thought it'd be better if I worked at a grocery store. And being the alcoholic that I am, you know, I thought that being at the grocery store would be a great idea also. You know, because, you know, I could work for a promotion, you know, and the promotion that I wanted was somewhere in the liquor area, you know, or maybe in the back room, you know, because I knew that they had trash in the morning. And all those aisles had to be cleaned up, and all the go backs had to be sorted and stuff. And I knew that that's, you know, where I needed to be. And since my dad got me the job, you know, everything was going to be good. You know, and then it allowed me to not participate in any family activities also because, you know, Dad, you got me this job. I really want to work hard at it. You know, I can't spend the weekend with you, you know, because I have to work. You know, I got to work. They want me to work. And just being manipulative and using that to my advantage because I would steal as much alcohol as I could, like single bottles from six packs, and I would hide them in the bushes in the back. But you know what? That area looked like diamonds. Every time they came back there, I was like, wow, Mara's doing a great job back here. You know, and it's like, oh, this place looks really good. Good job. You know, and it's like, I kept that up, you know, so I could hide who I was and what I was doing to the company. Because, you know, being, you know, 16, 17 years old, I really couldn't go out and buy it. You know, it was a pain. I think the guy at Catalina Liquor over here on Victoria, he used to sell to us, but it was just really expensive. You know, I mean, we got it, but it's just like he charges an arm and a leg. So stealing it, you know, for me and having a constant supply of alcohol was just, you know, something I thought, you know, was the greatest gift. You know, I was missing school. You know, here I become a junior. I had like maybe a freshman credits. You know, I started selling dope, you know, to get more money. And I thought this was a good way of living my life. You know, I did not see anything else but seeing that this was a normal way to live my life. But I do remember, you know, wanting that drink and knowing that this was hopeless to ever try to stop, you know, that sense of despair, that this is where my life is at, and then playing it off when someone asked me about it. You know, I can remember Mr. Neidhart, one of my English teachers at San Clemente High School, looking at me and just shaking his head because I just finished, you know, drinking some beers in my car and just shaking his head at me. And I can remember one of my other teachers, Mr. DeLeo, looking at me and just going, "Are you okay?" And I'm thinking, yeah. You know, just trying to deny it, you know, but he could smell the alcohol in my breath and know that I was totally drunk. And I was just like, and they didn't want to deal with me. You know, they didn't want to fill all the paperwork, call my parents and sit in conferences and try to get an intervention. They got 150 kids. And I knew that. And I took advantage of it. I just kept to myself quiet, you know, and just hoped that no one realized how drunk I was. And that's, you know, how I thought my life should be. And then going home and then realizing that this is all that I have. This is where my life is. This is how I exist. And the only way that my life would be better would to be maybe change the people I was with, change the amount that I drank. You know, these schemes that ran into my head, you know, that this would make my life better. You know, if I only did this or if I only didn't do this. You know, I always had some kind of solution in my head that always involved more drinking. You know, but every single time that I drank, I always passed out or I just threw up all over myself and it just wasn't pretty. You know, I drank to where I couldn't drink anymore. You know, I didn't know how to not drink any other way. And, you know, I just always woke up with a hangover trying to think, well, maybe if I did this differently, you know, but never did I have a solution that didn't include drinking? That's where my malady lied. And I just considered that. It's just like, I don't know any other way. I don't know any other way. My life came to a change one weekend. I was a senior, and I was invited to this party, but I had to work. And for me, being invited to a party, knowing that there was free alcohol at two different separate places, that was huge. Because to have my fill at two separate places, it was just like, it was like, oh, I can't get enough. I couldn't get enough. It was like, oh, this is great. I know that there's a keg over here, but I had to work. And all day, I'm getting ready for work, and I know that I'm just like, how can I get out of work? What lie could I tell, to get me out? What lie hadn't I told before? Because all I wanted to do was to get out of my responsibility to go at this party that had a lot of alcohol that was being served. I remember walking into work and walking up to my manager and just saying, I got problems in my family. And he goes, is everything okay? And I said, my grandmother died, And he said, oh my gosh, Mario, go home. I didn't realize the gravity of those words. It was like something I'd never said before, but it worked really well, and how happy I was. And all I can remember was that evening crawling in the gutter, scraping my hands and my knuckles. I hit my head on the curb so that I didn't break my red cup, because there were no more red cups. That's all I cared about. That's all I cared about. That I just was in that mode that if I just got a little bit further, I'd be a little bit closer to where I needed to be. Because every time I stood up, I fell down, but I couldn't break that red cup because there's no more red cups to be had. And that's all I cared about. I didn't care about what I did at work. I didn't care about where I was in the gutter. All I cared about that I just didn't have enough. That's all I cared about. I just didn't have enough. And that was my life. I woke up the next morning, throwing up, coming to, and as I came out of the bathroom, I saw my mom. She just had her eyes just totally red and just crying all night long. My dad he didn't know what he was going to do with me ever again. And a lot of flowers. Work had sent flowers to my house. And, and again, all I thought about was how this was going to affect my drinking. Was I going to get fired? Because I got a pretty sweet deal going on at work. And it just is like, oh my gosh, this is not something I really thought about. My parents were very, very upset, but I really didn't understand why. I told them I'd fix it, and I didn't know what I was doing. My life was... I was riding a psychotic horse into a burning barn, and that's where I was. And I can remember going into work, going through all these different scenarios in my head of how I was going to resolve this situation. How I was going to get out of this one more time. I didn't care about where I was at with school. I didn't care about where I was at with my family. All that mattered was I just kept things in status quo. That I didn't have to change anything. And then there was something else in the back of my head saying, what are you doing? Look at yourself and look where you're at in your life. And not understanding why this voice started to become a lot stronger. Why didn't I ever have it before? And I look at it now as my end. It was God telling me this is an opportunity for you. I give out opportunities. Are you going to take it? And I was compelled to listen to this voice for the very first time because I didn't know where to go. And for me, honesty was new. I didn't know how to deal with it. And I can remember my manager, is a big fellow. His name is Bob Bingenheimer. And he took me in the back and said, Mara, I need to talk to you. I go, oh, no, here it goes. here it goes. I gotta come up with some, you know, something. I gotta come up with something quick, you know, because I got about 100 paces before I'm sitting in his office. And all I could hear was this committee, you know, just give it up, you know, just stop. Stop where you're at right now and change things forever, you know. And then the other part of me says, geez, go down shooting. You know, you still got bullets in your gun. You know, just keep shooting, you know, and then leave a good course. That's how I wanted my life to be. And he sat me down and he goes, what's going on? And it came out. I go, Bob, I can't stop drinking. And I didn't know where it came from, but it just came out. And he sat back and he looked at me. He looked at my face and he looked at my eyes and he said, wow. You know, and he said, wow. And I just said, you know, I can't stop drinking. And I was a member of the retail clerks union. So he said, you know what? We have a program, you know, that you can go through. You know, we have something that you can attend. You could go and you can get help. We can get you help. And immediately, you know, my alcoholic mind said, yeah, I do need help. You know, I can pull a geographic. I need to get out of here now. You know, I got to exit stage left, you know, and just put myself away from school, put myself away from family, put myself away from work and try to sort things out. Now, I didn't know what that entailed help was. You know, all I thought help was is get me out of the situation that I was in. You know, I didn't know it was going to be a whole life turnaround thing for me. You know, all I knew is it was an exit that I needed quickly. I walked into New Beginnings Doctors Hospital, Lakewood, March 5th, 1986. And I went through 3 days of detox. And at the end of the third day, with a very, very dry mouth, I met Frank. And Frank came into my room with a small light blue book and a thick dark blue book. He said, my name's Frank, I'm an alcoholic. And to me, alcoholics were winos that kept them themselves and drank out of paper bags and asked for money. And he had this smile on his face that I didn't believe him. You know, he goes, My name's Frank, I'm an alcoholic. I looked at him and I go, you're full of shit. You know. What are you coming in here telling me this? You know? And he says, you're in the right place. You know, I work here. I come and talk to guys like you. And I said, well, what does that mean? You know, did they teach you how to drink? You know, because I thought that's what they did. You know, when you went to AA, they taught you how to drink better. And he said, no, I haven't had a drink in 13 years. And I thought, well, why would anybody want to do that? You know, I didn't understand that. You know, but one thing that I couldn't get out of my mind was the smile on his face. You know, the way he looked at me. You know, that serenity. You know, that sense of peace that I had not known ever since I started drinking. And from that moment on, you know, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. Bellflower, Long Beach, and Lakewood. To six meetings a night, and part of the program in order for me to get out is I had to get a sponsor. You know, I had to go through certain steps, and my first sponsor was named Pat Smith, and he looked at me and said, you know what, Mario, you may need sobriety, but unless you want sobriety, this will never work for you. And I didn't understand that. I said, what do you mean by that? And he says, what did you do to drink? And it hit me. There wasn't anything I wouldn't do to drink. And I told him that. And he goes, yeah, I believe you. You know, there wasn't anything I'd do to drink either. But you need to take that energy and multiply it by 10 in order to keep your sobriety. Because your sobriety is the most important thing you have. Period. Without your sobriety, you're dead. It's worth more to me than my wife. It's worth more to me than my kids. It's worth more to me than my job or any possession that I own. Because without it, I am nothing. And that's what it took hold. You know, that sobriety is priority number one, period, in my life. Because I'm no good to anything else without it. No good. And he also shared with me how important it was, you know, that I understand that what I was doing in my life at this time was only going to get better. He guaranteed it. He said, Mario, if you get this program now, I guarantee you that your life will only get better. Not easier, better. And I had to differentiate between the word easier and better and understand what that was. He told me that my sobriety is going to be the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. But your life will continuously, progressively get better. And he guaranteed it. He guaranteed it. He said, you know, there's a lot of guarantees on tires and refrigerators and stuff, but this one will never, ever let you down. You work this program, you work those steps one day at a time, and your life will only get better. Not easier, but better. And to me, you know, that was something hard to realize, you know, one day at a time. And I can remember sitting in my my counseling session, and I think my dad was more upset about it than anything, because they came up to Lakewood 3 times a week for 103 days with my brothers. And he looked at my counselor, Dan, he said, "You mean I'm never going to be able to drink a beer with my son again?" And I can remember, you know, Dan, you know, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, looking at my dad and just peacefully saying, "Just for today. Just for today." You know, and that made me feel good. You know, that's all I have is just today. That's all I got. That's a gift that's been given to me for today. And I'll pick up a drink no matter what. No matter what. And, you know, this program has allowed me to live my life one day at a time with the tools that they presented in those 12 steps. And my life has gotten better. Not easier, but better. I spent 103 days in that program, and I can remember taking my first step on 106 days. We were a bunch of friends of mine, you know, I thought it'd be good to go to Mexico, you know, and you know, my head started thinking, I'm not in the hospital anymore. I'm not, you know, what happens in Mexico stays in Mexico. You know, I can only be sober in the United States, you know, and so wanting to be a part of what I used to do, because we had a house in Rosarito, and we used to go down to Mexico when I was 15, we drive down there. And then up till I was 17, we just drove down there. And just in Mexico, you just have to have money. And you can drink anywhere you want. I thought that was the best thing in the world. And I remember going down there with 106 days of sobriety, you know, hoping that it would be different. You know, but I had, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous really messes up your drinking. You know, and working a program, Alcoholics Anonymous, those 12 steps really messes up your drinking. And I felt it. And I saw my friend that was down there, he was drinking and he was drunk, and I couldn't be a part of that, so I went somewhere else, you know, and I met this girl. And we started talking, and she goes, "Hey, you want to smoke some hash?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" You know, not even thinking about what I'd just gone through in my life, you know, not even thinking what I put my family through. You know, it's like, sure, no big deal. Yeah, let's go do that. That sounds like fun. You know, get me out of this mode that I'm in right now. And I remember walking back to her tent. She couldn't find it. And, you know, and so she goes, "You want a beer?" I go, "Sure." And in Mexico, you can't twist them off. You have to have a bottle opener. She had no bottle opener. So I'm walking with this beer. And I remember my good friend, he's a lot bigger than me. And we've been friends, and he's a normie, and he's the guy that would pick me up, clean me up, and take me back home every time that I was drunk. And I've known him since I was 5 years old, and he was just three sheets to the wind. He was so drunk, and he saw me with a bottle of beer in my hand, and he grabbed me by the throat and by the shirt, and he picked me up. I mean, he's strong. He picked me up right off the ground. I'm leaving the floor. And he grabs the bottle and throws it on the ground. and just breaks the bottle of beer. And he just picks me up and he just throws me down to the ground. And I'm in the dirt in Mexico, and that dirt is so foul. You don't know what's been in that dirt. And it's just like gross. And I'm sitting there, I got dirt in my mouth and on my face, and I just realize, you know, he's yelling at me. He goes, "Mario, if I ever see you with a bottle of beer," and he's drunk. He's drunk off, and he knows what I've been through. And he goes, "Mario, if I ever see you drink again, I'll beat you up so bad that you'll never be able to drink ever again in your life." You know? And, you know, that's when I realized that I was sick. You know, that I am powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable. And that's where I took my first step in Mexico. I got myself a sponsor and I got myself a commitment. And I realized how important, you know, this program is in my life. It only works if I work it. And what that meant for me is that I had to be a part of. I had to be a part of the winners. And that was going to meetings, sticking around the people that appreciated who I was in my life today, doing the things that I was doing in this program and outside of this program because of my recovery. I was told to get a good men's stag meeting because that's a good place for my recovery. My home group is the Monday night men's stag meeting in San Clemente. I've been going there for a while. And what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous are true relationships of friends that I've never experienced in my life before. There's no place in the world I can get it other than Alcoholics Anonymous. And the men that I call my friends today are truly brothers in my life today. I can call them with anything, and I have called them with anything in my life, and appreciated the time that they've given me to help me out of the situations that I've been in my life because of the experiences that they've had and shared with me. And that's something that I've never had in my life. And I'm close to my family. I'm close to my dad. I'm really close to my brothers. But there's something about the relationships that I have in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, again, I can't get anywhere else in the world. And I've been to meetings all around this country. And it's a great feeling to walk in and be welcomed. And they know exactly who you are and why you're in there. I do things in sobriety that I never thought I would be able to do, and that's have fun in sobriety. Because when I was drinking, I didn't understand how people could have fun. We go on a annual trip to Halama County Beach every year, and we do a lot of camping, we do a lot of fishing, we do a lot of surfing, and we have meetings out on the beach. And I've never laughed so hard in my life as being at those meetings and being around the campfire with sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And appreciate that in my life, that I have that today. You know, that's a gift, you know, that I never had when I was drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to develop a relationship with a higher power that I choose to call God today. When I was drinking, I was going to hell in a handbasket, and God didn't want any part of me. I was raised Catholic, and I can remember going to church drunk and just realizing that God is just waiting. And St. Peter's ready to slam the doors on me the moment I'm up there, you know. And I was afraid. I was afraid of what church had to offer me. Alcoholics Anonymous introduced me to the word spirituality and a personal relationship with a God of my understanding. That in itself has given me a strength that has been immeasurable in my sobriety. That relationship has allowed me to walk through the fears that I was faced in, the challenges that I was presented in my sobriety. I didn't have that when I was drinking. I just drank over it and I let it fester and I didn't really deal with it. The relationship that I have with my higher power today, which I choose to call God, is something that has given me direction and momentum that has made me realize that there's a plan in my life that has been predestined, and it has only gotten better in the faith that I've developed. I look at my relationship with my higher power, and I wasn't ready for the things that I have today when I first turned my life and my will over to the care of God and my understanding. The things that I have today have been entrusted to me through an incremental teaching of every single thing that I had to go through in order to be worthy of the things that I have today. And all those things were a test of faith that I kept. No matter how hard or how trying, I didn't pick up a drink. And I knew it was going to be better. You know, not every day are peaches and cream. Some days are piss and vinegar. But they're all good today because I'm sober. I'm not drinking. And that in itself is a gift that I never had when I was drinking. I know that my fear is solely derived from my lack of faith today. And that when I allow God to direct me and stay close, that things are getting better in my life. I used to think it's my turn in the barrel. And I used to go, oh no, why is this happening to me? And I don't think that way anymore. The things that are presented in my life today that are challenging to me is God getting my attention. Like no one else can. And He knows my heart. And all He's saying to me is He wants me closer to Him by putting those things in my life. And that's when it kicks in. You know, you got my attention. How can I be of service? What can I do? What is your will for me today? You know, those are the things I pray for in my life today. You know, my life has gotten better in ways I would not even have imagined. I remember cleaning out one of my file cabinets a few years ago, and I looked at a paper that I wrote in college. You know, where are you going to be in 10 years? You know, and I looked at it, and I think what some of my goals were, you know, to have like a washer and dryer, you know, and maybe start having a savings. You know, those were some of the things I thought, you know, were important to me at that time. You know, I have things today that I would not even have imagined. You know, I remember when I was drinking, watching people that I thought were happy, joyous, and free, and looking at the things that they had and families and stuff, and I said, I'll never be there. Why even bother thinking about it? You know, I've been blessed today with those things. You know, and I believe that I've been entrusted with those things because of my sobriety. Because of my sobriety. And for the people out there that are just brand new to this program, if you get this program now, I guarantee you, your life will only get better. It will only get better. Not easier, but better. And it's been true for me. I can look at my life and all the things that I've gone through in my sobriety. I've gone through divorce. I've gone through child custody. I've gone through leaving my children for almost two weeks in ICU when they're brand new, born, and just trusting, you know, things were going to be okay. And it's hard, but it's good. You know, I've learned to appreciate and savor the things that I've worked for today. And it's because of this program. This program taught me that. You know, that I take nothing for granted anymore. You know, every single moment of my life is a gift. And I've learned to appreciate that. And I can remember, you know, coming in at a meeting one time and my sponsor, you know, looking at me and says, how you doing, Mario? And I was married when I was like 19. And I had a kid on the way, and I was like working for a promotion to become a meat cutter. And I said, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I just, you don't understand. And I had this financial insecurity in me. And I just like was just totally stressing out. And I was suffering from that terminal uniqueness, you know, that no one else has ever had these problems before. And, you know, he looked at me and he said, you know what? You never had it so good. And I looked at him. I go, wait, did you not hear what I said to you? And he goes, you never had it so good, Mario. Every day is a holiday, every meal is a banquet, every paycheck is a fortune. That's an attitude of gratitude. And when it comes from my sponsor, it's like, shut up and listen, Mario. You know, he's only telling you this because he's been there. And from that moment on, you know, it's not that bad. You know, I'm going to get through this. And I got through it. And you know, I look at my life and, yeah, it's only gotten better. And for that, I'm grateful. And gratitude is a gift for me today. That, you know, that life is good. Life is very good because of this program. Living one day at a time. Thank you for letting me share.